Title of our lesson today is Good Legal Advice. I can tell you from personal experience that good legal advice in Sherman, Texas costs $300 an hour. I shall give you this considerably cheaper. Maybe less than I have, because we're really not talking about, well, we are talking about good legal advice. What we're really talking about is listen to your in-laws. Now, this is a little more controversial, isn't it, huh? Especially for you men out there. Come on now. This is a little bit, but okay. Don't want to get... Our lesson is from Exodus chapter 18. You know, a number of months ago, John Stevens preached from Deuteronomy, and he got all kinds of grief from his family over preaching the Old Testament. And I've tried to back him up by occasionally going back here, but he never shows up. You just tell him I'm through. I'm sorry. I just can't do that anymore if he's not going to show up. Okay. You'll remember the story of the Exodus. Okay. Moses is born. His mother and his sister hide him. He's raised by Pharaoh's daughter. As he reaches adulthood, he commits murder and has to flee. And he flees into the land of Midian, right down here. Okay. And he lives there about 40 years. He's 40 years old when he starts, and he lives there for 40 years. So at about 80, he sees the burning bush. Okay, it's all happens right down here. Okay, in this area around Sinai, if we've got Sinai located properly, we think we do. And the Lord tells him to go back and save his people. Okay, and he does. And we know the story of the great plagues and the great confrontations between Moses and Pharaoh, which are really confrontations between God, between Jehovah and Pharaoh. And we remember about how some of the plagues are against the land, some of the plagues are against the Nile River, and then finally the plagues are against the people and even Pharaoh when they lose their firstborn son. And you'll remember how they leave Egypt. The Egyptians almost drive them out after that last 10th plague and give them gold and jewelry. And then Pharaoh changes his mind and chases them, and they cross the sea miraculously. And in fact, I've got another map here. They cross here, and they head down this direction, eventually going to Mount Sinai. And it is in this area, before they reach Sinai, that our story takes place. Okay, now remember, Moses has lived about 40 years down here. We don't know exactly how long the plagues took, but not a whole lot of time. But he's coming down this way with the people. And of course, these are a people that have grown up in slavery. They've grown up in Egypt. They don't know the Lord like they should. They haven't developed the character which they should have. And really, their only guiding path is Moses, and they don't always listen to him. And you'll remember that one of the issues that they've had is water. They're out here in the desert, and they complain. And they say, you know, did you take us out of Egypt to kill us so that we would die out here in the desert, Moses? It would be better for us to be back in Egypt as slaves than to be out here. And you remember at Meribah, the Lord says, Moses, take the staff. Take the staff that you used in the plagues. Take the staff that you used to part the waters of the Red Sea. You take that, and you go to this rock, and you strike it. Okay. And it is, and water comes out and feeds the people. And the people see that Moses is with God is with Moses in a very powerful way out here in the desert. And of course, we ask ourselves, well, I mean, they saw all the plagues. Why have they changed? And we have to remember that people back then had locales for their gods. Okay? There were gods of mountains, there were gods of rivers, there was a god in the sea, and they had this idea, if I get far enough away from the locale, my god's not powerful. My god doesn't work here. So the Lord is demonstrating to them that I'm not bound by these localities. I'm the god out here in the desert, just like I was the god out there by the Nile River. But there's one kind of downside to all this. When the people realize that Moses really does listen to God, and God really does talk through Moses, and that Moses is his leader, they come to Moses for all their problems. Okay? Now, you mothers know what this is like. Okay? I'm going to give you, when your child is 11 years old, she realizes that you have got all the money. And they come to you for money. Okay? All right? And it's kind of the same thing, isn't it? You see that she's not listening over there. I can say all these things. And they realize, hey, we've got this guy who talks to God. Who God talks to him, rather. And so, you know, it's kind of like the man that came up to Jesus and said, settle my inheritance between me and my brother. You know, and Jesus says, I'm not going to do it. Well, I think we're on safe ground to say Jesus was wiser than Moses because Moses took on this task. Okay. Now, this is before the law has been given. Okay. Before the events in Mount Sinai, and he's leading these people, thousands upon thousands of these people, and you can imagine people that have been uprooted in their land. All they have is what they've carried away. Maybe some of them have been slaves to the same household, and one of them got a little more gold than the other. You can imagine all the things that are going on, and they're coming to Moses. Okay. And so he's paying the price for fame. And then we see Jethro, and this is really where our story begins. Now, Jethro is Moses' father-in-law. Sometimes he's called Reuel. Most of the time in this part of Exodus, he's called Jethro. And he's the one who took Moses in down here, gave him one of his daughters as a wife, had two sons, and Moses took the wife and the sons with him when he went back to Egypt, but evidently they have gone back because as the Israelites are traveling this way, Jethro is traveling this way to meet Moses to take his wife and his sons to be with him. Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about Jethro. Jethro is a priest of Midian. Okay. Now, this is one of these priesthoods that we don't know a lot about. I think we're on safe ground to think that he would be a polytheist. Okay, but as he sees the events of the Exodus, he comes to realize that if God, that Jehovah or Yahweh is not the only God, he is the powerful God. And he has this idea of being an advocate for Jehovah. And so he comes and meets. He brings Moses and his wife, and I don't know how long they've been apart. This tells you something about people back then, because when Jethro appears with Moses' wife and sons, it says Moses went out and kissed Jethro. Don't take that example, guys, okay? He seems to have been happier to see his father-in-law than he was to see his wife, okay? And that's just, even if that's true, that's not the way you want to do this, okay? All right, so you guys, you're learning from this, okay? All right. And so they have this good visit, and they stay together, and Jethro stays around a while. And he notices Moses' problem, okay? He notices that Moses has got people around him all the time wanting them to settle their claims, want them to decide, wanting him to give them legal satisfaction. And so we come to this good advice part of the story, which is in the 18th chapter of Exodus, beginning and in verse 13. The next day Moses set to judge the people. And the people stood around Moses from morning until evening. And when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people, he said, "What is this that you are doing for the people? Why do you sit alone and all the people standing around you from morning till evening?" And Moses said to his father-in-law, "Because the people come to me to inquire of God. And when they have a dispute, they come to me, and I decide between one person or another, and I make them know the statutes of God and his laws." And Moses' father-in-law said to him, "What you are doing is not good." Now, I got to say, Jethro must have had some moral authority, because Moses is one of the toughest guys in the Old Testament. Okay, I mean, you know, and to say, "You're not doing this right," you can imagine Moses might have taken that wrong, because, you know, I worked all these miracles, I've done all this, these people are griping against me, and now my own in-laws are saying I'm not doing it right. But Moses, of course, we know, is a wise man also, because he listens to Jethro. And Jethro tells him this, okay,
Before
I tell you what it tells me, we've got to remember, you know, Paul writes about the Old Testament, says all Scripture is God-breathed, it's inspired of God, and is profitable for teaching, for instruction, and for instruction in righteousness. And this is one of these stories that we have a little trouble getting some righteous instruction out of it, okay? And those are the kind of stories I like. Okay, so as we go on, we're going to try to get what we can out of this story, realizing that we may have to put something in it to get out of it. So there we go. That's the aside. Okay, so he says, look, get you some good men, okay? Men that don't take bribes, that are honest. And we need to realize that is so important, okay? That is so important. No judiciary can last or be effective if people don't trust that fair judgment will be given. And in the Old Testament, constantly the prophets were railing against people who did not treat the poor fairly. Because, you know, if you got a court that takes bribes, you got money, you can give the bribes, okay? But if you're poor, you can't. So he says, you got to get people that are fair, of your thousands and of your 10,000s, and you let them make these decisions. Now here, and you only solve the tough cases, okay? Now this is kind of what it looks like, okay? That's how Moses was, and you know, my grandmother had 8 children. I've got 9 problem people. Listed here, and you can imagine how she was kind of beset on with the kids fighting and all this kind of stuff. And Moses is like that, isn't he? He's just got everybody coming to him. You know, me first, me next. You can just imagine it's almost bedlam. Okay? And guess what? He makes a decision. Probably 50% of the people he makes decisions for are not going to be happy. Okay? And I don't know if they had appeals and rehearing like we do or not, but anyway, so I'm going to put this in the modern hierarchical system that you might see in a corporation or something, and I don't get too caught up on these slides, but this is kind of what happens. Everybody comes to Moses, okay, and he solves all our problems. And we can kind of read in there that he's probably not solving all their problems, okay? Because he's there from morning till night, and you just kind of assume that there's a bunch of people he's got to come back and say, come back tomorrow. And, you know, you got 30% of the people come back tomorrow, and another bunch show up, and you can see how you get this big backlog of things don't work. But the worst part of it is Moses is wearing himself out, okay? He's got more important things than to decide who owns this calf, or whose goat that is, or, you know, this or that. And so, here's what Jethro tells him. He says, you go to something like this. You get you some judges. Now, I've only got one level here. He really talks about, I think it is 3 levels. You get you some judges, and we'll get this guy, and he can take care of these problems, and we'll get this guy can take care of these problems, and this guy can take care of these problems, and the only problems which will get to you are the ones that these guys, and there's more levels, you know how this looks, these guys can't take care of it, and you only handle the big and the tough problems. Reminds me of a cartoon in the New Yorker about 25 years ago with this big executive, and he's sitting in this palatial office, you know, on a high building in New York City. He's got this great big desk, and there's nothing on the desk, and he says, I am the champion of delegation. Nothing passes my desk. In other words, I've got other people doing everything for me. I'm just drawing the big bucks. Well, that's not exactly what Moses does. But it's kind of, and Moses did it, and guess what? It worked. Okay? And we can understand why it works. You probably, wherever you work or did work, have some kind of system like this. Okay? It's rare for a person to try to be the boss of everybody. He just tries to be the boss of some people who are boss of other people who are boss of other people until finally we find ourselves down there going. Okay. And it works, and that's kind of the end of the story. Okay. So Moses listened to the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he said. Moses chose able men and made them heads over the people, chiefs of thousands and of hundreds and of fifties and tens, and they judged the people at all times. And any hard case they brought to Moses, but small matter they decided among themselves. And then Moses let his father-in-law depart, and he went away to his own country. Any questions? story is a little bit anticlimactic, isn't it? It's one of those stories we wonder, well, you know, Moses, why'd you put this in here? What's it about? Well, let's see if we can dig something out of it. Okay. All right, let's see if we can take four lessons from this. Okay, now, if we're going to stretch the Old Testament a little bit, just be aware of that. But we can learn from these things, okay? Four lessons I want you to consider. I want you to consider them. I'm not talking about where you work. Well, I am kind of talking about where you work. I'm not talking about if you decide to set up a business, how to set it up. You know, there may be a better ways to do it. But how to lead your Christian life, okay? How to work, okay? One, nobody can do it all. Okay. If there is not a more able leader in the Old Testament than Moses, and he couldn't do it all. Okay. You got to realize you cannot do it all. Okay. Clyde is here. Clyde, you know who Joey Gallo is? Y'all know who this is? The support of North Texas professional sports is lacking in this congregation if you don't know who Joey Gallo is. Okay. He's a home run hitter for the Rangers, right? I think he's about 23 years old, and he's hit more home runs than he has singles, okay? And he gets up there, and he strikes out a lot, but he swings a lot, and he hits some of those balls where they've never been hit before. But I was watching Joey Gallo the other day, and they were behind by three runs. It was in the late innings, and there was one person on base. And Joey's up there, and you know, I guess you'd call him a Babe Ruth kind of a guy, if you don't remember who Babe Ruth is. Mickey Mantle? Bobby Bonds? What have I got to say here? Judge from the Yankees, I forget his first name. And he's up there. And the commentator said, we don't need a home run. Why? Because we're three runs behind. And a home run will only give us two runs. Okay. Now, I got to tell you, I've never quite bought this. I say get a run whenever you can. And Joey Gallo gets the count to 3-0. And he takes one pitch, strike. You know, they always throw it down the middle at 3-0. And of course, I'm going, swing at the ball, Joe. Swing at the ball. Hit that ball. Second pitch, strike. Third pitch, he lets it go when he gets a walk. Now, he knew he couldn't do it all. He knew that his job wasn't to hit the home run. It was to get on base and let the guy behind him hit the home run or get the double or whatever it was. Okay? We can't do it all. Just not going to work that way. You may have been in a church that was run by one guy. I was in a church one that was run by the wife of one guy. Okay? Doesn't work. All righty? You've probably been at some meeting where the guy or the gal doesn't show up and you can't get anything decided because everybody knows we got to have the one person. You cannot do it all. Don't try to do it all. Be willing to take on 3-0 and 3-1. Okay? Now, this one's a little more controversial. Okay? And I want you to think about this before you get mad at me. Not all good advice, that should be a C, advice comes directly from God or from Scripture. Now, what do I mean by that? Sometimes in this life, we need to turn to other people. Sometimes we need to turn to wise people to help us understand what God's plan is for us, what Scripture says about our lives, what we should do in a situation, because guess what? You can't find it all in Acts 2:38. It doesn't tell you everything that you need to know. Wise people listen to wiser people. Wiser people know that there are people that are even wiser than they are. There is a great repository of truth. There is a great repository of wise thinking. There's a great repository of good advice in our congregations, often in our families, often among other people who have experienced the Christian life. Because the Christian life teaches us stuff, Okay. Now, I need to talk to you young kids, and you young kids used to all sit back there, and y'all are kind of divided here, so I got to go back here. I want you to listen. The world isn't telling you this. Okay? The world is telling, listen to yourself. Or worse, the world says, listen to your friends. Every parent, I think I'm right on this. I know it's true for me. Every parent has had a child come home from school and say something absolutely outlandish is true. Absolutely just cannot be true. And you go, where'd you get this? Well, Joey told me. And Joey's like 7 years old. And where'd Joey get it from? I don't know. Maybe Jane told him. I don't, you know, we know the kids do this. Well, guess what? When you graduate from high school, this doesn't stop. You know, we see it all the time. Somebody told me this, you know. You know who the worst is? Preachers are the worst. Because this is what they'll do. Some preacher will hear something, and he hears it from somebody he trusts, and he says, this is a good man. And he said it, so it must be true. And he will just continue to say it. And then the next preacher will say, well, he's a good man. It must be true because he said it. And finally you reach out, and somebody out there in the audience is going, that can't be true. That can't be true. I had a preacher down in Utopia, Texas, and he got up. He says, it has been scientifically proved that when a person dies, they lose 2 or 3 ounces of weight. And that is their spirit leaving the body. Well, it hadn't been scientifically proved, and it does not happen. And when I asked him about it, well, brother so-and-so said it was true. Okay, so we're all the kind of the same way. Let's don't be too hard on our children, but we've got to realize we need to listen to wise people, okay? You will find somebody that will tell you you're okay when you're not. You'll find somebody that says it's a great idea to drive down Wesley Street at midnight at 90 miles an hour. Well, guess what? It's not. But you can find somebody that'll say that. You can find anybody or somebody that'll say just about anything you want. But if you listen to them, you're not being very wise. Okay? You're not being very wise. The Lord's work can consume us to the point where we can no longer do the Lord's work. Okay? There are a small number of people who have a special calling. And I guess we would say maybe the Apostle Paul in among them. Okay? But for most of us regular Christians, we need to live a life, okay? Now, what am I saying here? I'm saying that Christianity is played out in our lives, and our lives need to be successful lives. They need to be lives that reflect Christ, and if we work so hard at the Lord's work that we can't live these successful lives, we're going to fail. The Lord's work's not getting done. Okay? We're not the Apostle Paul. You know, Peter had a wife. Okay? He wasn't in as much as Paul. Okay? James had a wife. Okay? He had 4 daughters. And so we need to have a balance in our life between the two parts of Christianity. Doing the Lord's work, important. Living the Lord's life, important. You've got to keep that balance. Because if you do too much of this is going to fail. Nobody's going to listen to you. How many great men in the Old Testament had lousy children? Most of them. You know, most of the children of Israel, you know, Judah and them, were pretty raunchy, hard-living, mean guys. And and Eli, you remember Eli's sons? And Samuel, of course, the follower to Eli and his sons did the same thing. And David, oh, don't get me started there. You know, rebellion, incest, rape, you name it. That was kind of his family, and we wonder why that is. And my guess is they didn't spend the time with him. Okay. They didn't spend the time with him. Now Moses, by the way, is kind of a bit of interesting because we hear about the, you know, the story of Moses leaving the Mount Sinai to go to Egypt to start the Exodus process, and he takes his wife and his sons with him, and then they come back, but we don't hear anything about his sons there. And the best I can say is, well, at least they don't seem to have turned bad. Okay, so maybe in the Old Testament, that's he did a bit better job than most. But we've got to build in our Christian lives. We've got to build Christian lives. Okay, and that takes some of our effort, and that's part of the job. Okay, maybe you have worked with the person that shows up with dirty clothes at work. Maybe you worked with the person who can never get anything done because they're too consumed with other stuff. Okay, that person's not a good employee, is it? Okay, you got to take a little time to shine your shoes and iron your clothes and do whatever is necessary. Okay, next, we need to be practical. Okay. Jethro's advice is kind of, maybe this is the first organizational chart that there ever was. It's just practical advice, okay? He was able to look. Moses was, you know, had his head barely above water, you know, just the nose sticking out of water, and he was able to see it immediately and realize the problem. And I'm going to tell you, probably all of us would have seen the problem. Now, we might not have said anything about it because Jethro was a pretty forceful person, but when we make a Christianity that doesn't really work, okay, that doesn't continue over the long haul, which doesn't accomplishes the goals of Christianity, we need to ask ourselves, why is this? Because Christianity is a practical religion. Okay? It's not a religion that says go out on the mountaintop and wait. It's a religion that says live your life among Christians, among the world, shine your light, be a lamp, be the salt of the earth, be all these kinds of things. And we need to be practical about it. The only thing that works is what works. There's a famous story about medieval monks. Okay. And they wanted to know how many teeth a donkey had. I don't know if this story is true or not, but Brother So-and-so told it to And they got Aristotle out, and they got the Bible out, and they got Thomas Aquinas, I think it was, out and tried to find out how many teeth a donkey had. And one of the junior monks says, why don't we just go out to the donkey and count his teeth? And they nearly tore him apart. It was so against any, they were so, it was just anathema to them that we would actually go count. We don't trust Thomas Aquinas and the Bible and whatever these things we're looking at. Well, now we have to kind of laugh, don't we? Because none of us really care how many teeth the donkey has. We don't have donkeys, and we don't need to know if one of them has lost a tooth and is not going to be able to eat properly. But sometimes we're that way, aren't we? Sometimes we want to not look at what works, but what we think ought to be done. Sometimes we want to look at not what works, but what was done in the past. Christianity is a practical religion. It's designed to produce other Christians. It's designed to produce righteous living in Christians. It's, I think I'm on safe ground to say it's designed to produce families that follow Christ. It's designed to produce neighbors who see us and say, hey, I like something about what you're doing. It's just practical. It's not, you're the closest thing we've got to an academic. It's not like a PhD. Okay, my daughter's got a PhD, and she's got there's another woman in her church who's got a PhD, and they don't use it. And she kind of gets mad when people don't call her doctor. But I say, you know, what is the practicality of it? Okay. What is the practicality of it? Okay. Christianity's practical. We need to be practical in our own lives. Okay. We need to learn from what works. Was what Moses doing working? Just barely, and not for long. You can tell he was going to go under. But what Jethro told him to do is something that could last for the long term. Because none of us know how long we're going to live. Okay? And the goal is to make it all the way. You know, one of the things that financial advisors want to tell you is how much money you need for retirement. Okay? How much money you need to retire so you have the standard of living that you have. And there's only one problem. Nobody knows how long we're going to live in retirement. You know? And like the guy said, if I'd have known I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself. Well, those are not questions the Christian needs to answer. The Christian needs to answer the practical questions of what do I do today? What do I do tomorrow? Let the Lord take care of the future, but I need to get to the future. Because guess what? The Lord may give us a long life. And we need to be prepared for that. The Lord may not give us a long life. We need to be prepared for that. Okay? We need to be practical. So I hope you've learned something from this. I'm going to back up here. I hope I can make this back up. I can't. Okay, well, anyway. You remember that organizational chart, the one with Moses in the middle and everybody here? Okay. The next time you feel beset by children, people at work, debt, the Texas Longhorns scoring 41 points and losing by 10, whatever it is that just seems to get you real down, okay, just remember those four lessons. Don't try to do it all yourself, okay? Remember that you need to take the community to help you, to give you advice, and you need to listen to the community's advice. They are smarter than you are by yourself. And finally, just live a life that's practical, okay? Just live a life that's practical. We don't want to be beset by cares. Even other people's cares are our own cares. We want to be victorious in our lives.